Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Yacht Crew Vlogs right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Rhea. I am your host, and today I'm really pleased to welcome Captain Alexandria Hegarty, correct?
Yes.
How are you?
Very good. I'm actually on a ship right now, the Cape Washington. We're based out of Baltimore, Maryland, in the United States. And currently, I'm a chief mate on this vessel. It's 800 feet long. And it's a ready reserve vessel. It's under the Maritime Administration. And so we are used for many different things, from moving military and government cargo to responding in an emergency, if need be, like Hurricane Sandy or something of that nature. And we're here to support the United States interests. So it's quite exciting to be here with you today, and I just recently obtained my Master Mariner, and it's been quite a road. It took me 10 years to get there, and it's quite a pleasure to be able to come here with you and talk to you about what it took to get there.
Well, to be honest, you didn't actually start out as a kid with these dreams of being a captain. You sort of took a little bit of a different route.
Yes, I did. I guess it was sort of funny when I was in fourth grade, I told my mom, you know, I want to be a rock star. And she just laughed, and I just wanted to play guitar and headbang. And she said, what? And obviously later on, you know, I took a little turn. I went to Waldorf school. So it's a very interesting classical arts school. I played violin when I was younger, and I got a scholarship to go to this Waldorf school in Garden City, New York. I grew up in New York City, and shipping wasn't really something we talked about too much when I was younger. My parents weren't in the field. My mom was a nurse. My dad was a cop. Very traditional roles back in the day, and sailing was really never something that was mentioned. However, I was into swimming and lifeguarding, and I started with working at the Southampton Fresh Air Home, which asked me to be a lifeguard there, and then I started working on a sailboat. From there, I started teaching handicapped kids from the Hospital of Special Surgery in New York, and during that summer, and I fell in love with sailing and being out on the water. From there, it just grew into a passion. I decided to go to Earlham College, which was a international Quaker school in Indiana, of all places, but it had a really famous program in international relations and comparative languages and linguistics. So that was my double major over there. I did French and Spanish as my two languages. And then in the summer times, I volunteered. So I worked with now it's called Tall Ships America in Newport, Rhode Island, and fell in love with sailing all these different wooden vessels from all over the country and racing them. And after that, I started meeting people who were merchant mariners. I didn't really know much about the fields at all. And so I met a girl named Mary Schneider, who is actually a captain now with Military Sealift Command. And looking back, it's sort of funny. I was 18, 19 years old, and she said, you know, this is a great career. It's really fun. And I go to Massachusetts Maritime Academy. And she said there were 7 different maritime academies in the U.S. And, you know, it stuck in my head. But, you know, I still continued on to my studies and got my bachelor's degree. And then all of a sudden, I was invited to race in France with Etoile Marine Croisière. So Etoile Marine has a bunch of sailing yachts and tall ships. I started sailing at age 21 over there. And it was in Saint-Malo, France, a beautiful area. I loved it. I spoke French, so I was using the sailing and my languages and everything that I loved. And I would do, you know, weekend trips all over France and Europe. And then after that, the Danish Sail Training Association invited me to go race up with them on a 100-year-old schooner named Jens Krog. And they gave me a scholarship and said, come join us. I was the only American on the vessel. With 20 Danes, and they were all college students as well. A lot of them were pre-med, statisticians, and language majors as well. So it was a funny, unique group of people that were highly educated, and they were really fun. And we had a great time sailing in the summer, and I fell in love with Denmark and the people. And, you know, there's a lot of gender equality over there, and they, you know, women could do anything up in Scandinavia. And so I thought, you know what, this is a great place to live. I'm 21, I'm free as a bird. I took my one backpack and I decided to settle in Denmark at age 21. And so I wasn't really sure what to do. I actually applied to be a secretary at Maersk. And they said, sorry, you need a master's degree in order to get a secretary position with Maersk. And I thought, this is strange. And as I went to different companies over there just to get my first job and my first foot in the door, they said, oh, no, everybody, most people have a master's degree in Scandinavia. It's quite normal. Everyone's pretty highly educated. So I thought, okay, well, what can I get into? And so I got into Aarhus University. It's the second largest university in Denmark, in cognitive semiotics. So I got my Master of Arts there. And it was an interesting degree. It was interdisciplinary of neuroscience and linguistics. And I did a very interesting thesis that a lot of people are like, what? I did a thesis on parallel distributed processing neural networks in semantic and Alzheimer's patients. And I was really interested in neuroscience before. And I had worked with Dr. Albert Getty, and I was trying to get a PhD in neuroscience and just sailing in the summer times. Unfortunately, when I applied the third time, I sort of got a little upset because I didn't get it, and they kept giving the scholarships and the PhDs to Danish nationals, which makes sense. And so my mom asked me, okay, Alex, well, what do you want to do with your life? And I said, well, I don't know. I love sailing. I love languages. I love traveling. And she said, well, you know, why don't you come back to New York? There's a school called New York Maritime. And I thought, oh, I'm so done with studies. And she said, well, you were thinking about doing a PhD. So what's the difference? You know, why don't you try this? And so I just on a whim decided to apply there. Didn't really know what I was getting myself into. I just applied to the master's program, a Master of Science in International Transportation Management, and I got in, and Dr. Albert Getty asked me, well, why don't you apply for a fourth time for a PhD in neuroscience at Copenhagen University? And I said, you know what, I've tried enough, and I don't want to be a research assistant forever. I was working for the Center for Functionally Integrated Neuroscience over there, and I just said, you know what, this isn't for me. It was really exciting. I've enjoyed my time here and learning Danish and, you know, French and Spanish, and I dated an Italian, and that's how I picked up Italian over in Europe. So I spent a good 5 years in Europe, and now here I am, 25, 26, and entering into SUNY Maritime in New York at I think 25, 26 years old. And I started in, this was 2010, and I decided to finish the program. I was really done with studying, so I tried to finish this 3.5 year program in 2 years, which I was able to do. I took 26 credits a semester, and I just banged the classes out and graduated December 2012 from New York Maritime with a second master's degree and my third mate's license. And you know, it was a lot of studying, a lot of training, but it was fun. I can't say that I didn't enjoy all the fun cruises. There were definitely points that were very challenging. It was a completely different area to study, different math, different sciences, terrestrial, celestial navigation, cargo stability, all that stuff. And anybody that's thinking about going to a maritime academy, you know, just make sure that you commit from beginning to end and know what your goal is. When I started, I was just a master's student, and then they finally convinced me to go for the license. And here I am now, Master Mariner, 10 years later. And I'm really happy with where I went. A little traveling here and there, but it's been quite an adventure.
You have definitely accomplished a lot in your lifetime already. And, you know, the amount of education that you received along the way is absolutely phenomenal. How many women were at class with you, were in class with you?
Oh, wow. I would say maybe 2 to 3 per class. So I'd be in a room of maybe 40 guys and maybe 2 or 3 women. In the graduate license program, as I was an older student, it was just me and one other girl out of 30 students in the graduate license program. So there's two programs there, one with a bachelor's degree and the third engineer's license, and then there's a graduate license program. So you get the master's degree with the third mate's license. And so maybe 25 people, it was just me and one other girl, Michelle Hammond. But the graduation rates for women that are older are much higher than the graduation rates for women that are starting in the bachelor's program.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's because we're older and we're much more certain of what we want, and we want to complete what we started, and we know that this is something that we really want to go through from beginning to end. Not only do you have to get the master's degree in order to get the license, the U.S. Coast Guard will not allow you to get the license without an actual degree. So since we're focused on one, you can't get one without the other. So as they're combined, everybody that I've met that started the graduate license program has completed it. So it's quite interesting. So I would say 5 to 10% women on average at New York Maritime.
Do you think that you were treated any differently when you were in class than the male, your male counterparts?
In school, I don't think so, because I lived off campus, so I didn't have the same regular campus experience as the women did. We have a quasi-military regiment. That's where you have to wear a uniform and comply to all the rules, and everybody's supposed to be treated the same. I saw a lot more once I went into the real world, and that's where things got a little bit more hairy.
Well, you know, it was really interesting. Today, we had arranged this interview quite a few days ago, but today you posted something up on LinkedIn, and I really like to see stats and figures. I find it quite fascinating, especially when it comes to the maritime industry. And you were stating that there's only 149 female master mariners in the U.S. with a population of 328 million in the country. That's crazy.
Yes, and I just got those stats today from the U.S. Coast Guard, so they are true. And it made me think for a minute, wow, we are such a small group of people, and I probably could list half of them off the top of my head. And the other thing to consider is that some of them may have an active license, but they're not sailing on it. They're working a shoreside position within a company. Like one of my friends, she's working in autonomous shipping in Kongsberg in Norway. And she holds her Master Mariner license. Some of them are working as consultants for maritime law companies. Some of them are working as pilots, but we're a small little group, and I don't even think we realize how small we are and how much more we can grow as a group and how much more we can be inspirational to young girls coming up. I just had two female cadets on board, and it was a wonderful experience. They were really excited to have a female in charge of the deck department. And, you know, I taught them as much as I could in the short period of time that I had them. But, you know, they came to me and gave me stories of what it's like to be a cadet and how one of them had a hard time. Her father worked he was a deckhand with a company in New York. I think it's Harbor Cruises. And he's worked there for maybe 15, 20 years. And she was older, joining New York Maritime as a cadet. And I said, well, what was the most difficult part? And why did you decide to go to a maritime academy? And she said, you know, I have a 100-ton master's license, and they wouldn't promote me, even though I did everything right. I've worked with the company for years. They would not promote me to captain on any of their cruises. Now, that's quite upsetting to me, because it's extremely important for her to take that opportunity, and especially having a family member directly related to her dad, and doing a good job in the company for years and years, she was quite upset. And I think her boss said to her, Well, you know, I'll promote you to captain once you get your unlimited tonnage third mate's license from SUNY Maritime. And she said, you know what? You can go get lost. That's not of interest to me. She said, why would I come back to this company to make less money and use my unlimited tonnage license to work a 100-ton vessel? Obviously, you know, the whole fact that women have to prove themselves and go further is quite exhausting. And it was really interesting. Recently, I was on a plane from Aspen to the East Coast, coming here out to the ship to do a relief job. And I had a woman sit next to me and say, oh, wow, it's so interesting what you do. And I said, yeah, well, what do you think about female airplane pilots? And she said, oh, well, you know, I never really thought that was okay. And I said, really? She said, in the beginning, she felt very uncomfortable seeing two female airline pilots driving the plane. And I said, so would you feel awkward if there was a female ship captain in charge of your life and thousands of other lives, or of the millions of dollars of cargo? And she said, you know, I had to step back and reevaluate myself and my judgments and where they come from, because they are based out of nothing. And she originally thought, wow, they can't get a guy to do this job. This is all they have left are these two women. And so she already had a pre-existing connotation that women can't really do the same job or a good job in navigating a ship or driving a plane. And now she's slowly opening, I guess, her mind to that idea. And she's really happy to see women flying planes. But I think it's something that's just going to have to take time. But
do you think that the maritime industry straight across the board is doing its job in encouraging young women coming up, you know, 18, 19, 20, to showcase to them the same way they do to males, that this is a potential career, whether you want to be as your master unlimited, or if you want to be, you know, a super yacht captain or a yacht captain? Is there enough encouragement within the maritime industry for young women to go for those roles?
I think it's quite difficult, honestly. A lot of the guys that I know that went into this industry had fathers that were pilots, captains. Their parents were in the industry, and so they were nudged into this, and they were expected to become, you know, a harbor pilot. And, you know, dad makes $1 million a year taking ships in and out of New York City, and he's like, well, you know, you're my son, of course you're going to get this. And I find that the industry, it's quite difficult to get women into it, because they were never really given the idea to think about it. I know that Disney Cruises just recently had a female Mickey Mouse dressed as a captain to get more girls interested in the maritime profession, which I thought was an interesting video to see.
not sure how that would encourage it. I'm not sure that actually even sends the right message, to be honest, but
that's how I feel. And I also see other captains that parade around, female cruise ship captains that parade around in, you know, Louboutin heels and extremely tight outfits. And, you know, we also have to differentiate if you want to be treated professionally to dress the part and to look professionally. And, you know, a woman on a cargo ship obviously is not going to dress the same way as somebody on a yacht or somebody on a cruise ship. And, you know, the importance should be based on the excitement of navigation, learning stability, learning celestial navigation, using a sextant. I mean, I'm speaking on the deck department side, getting girls to speak to people like myself about what kind of possibilities are out there, and that it really is possible. The two cadets that I had on my ship recently just wrote me and said, thank you so much, you're truly a role model, and I hope one day to be like you, and I really want to be captain now that I see that it's possible. And I think seeing more female role models in the spotlight is going to help young girls. I have fathers now writing me on LinkedIn that say, I have three girls and I never really thought about the maritime career, but now seeing you, I really want them to talk to you. I believe in speaking at, I'm going to speak at Aspen High School to get more young girls involved, because I think girls do have an adventurous spirit. We just haven't really fully tapped into all of it out there. And, you know, sailing is, you do have to have grit, and it is definitely a personality. You have to have a certain type of character and personality, I think, to come out here. It's not for everybody, male or female. It's not easy. The seas aren't always going to be tame. You may always hope that they're fair, but there's many a time when, you know, we're riding on the outside of a typhoon doing weather avoidance, and, you know, I do get seasick, and, you know, it's part of the adventure, I think, and part of the excitement of when I get on a ship. Normally I'm out there for 4 months and I'm traveling the world, and sometimes I don't even know where the ship's going to go. Goes to different places around the world. The last ship I was on for 4 months is an oceanographic survey vessel with scientists from NASA. And so we get a new batch of people every other month. It's very exciting. I've got different people to talk to, brilliant minds, and we go all over the world. But going all over the world means temperature changes, different weather, doing typhoon avoidance in Southeast Asia. That's where I was this past year. Going from snow in the beginning of your 4 months to, you know, extreme heat and torrential downfalls later on. And I think the career is interesting if people really think about all the different hats that you wear. One of the things that I find really exciting about our career is I'm not just in the deck department. I'm not only doing navigation, I'm the medical officer, the safety officer, the anti-terrorism officer, I'm the ballast control operator, I have to do stability, I have to talk to the crew, if there's rifts between the crew, sometimes they'll come up to me, and then that has to be solved. You're dealing with the company, you're dealing with regulators, auditors, inspections, you're having a classification society coming on board. There's so many different people and moving parts. And then my ship is very international. So I have American, it's an American flag vessel, but those American citizens come from all walks of life. They're from all backgrounds. So in terms of me falling in love with sailing and traveling the world, to me, this is the perfect career. I work 6 months a year and I have 6 months vacation a year. And some people may or may not know that merchant mariners are paid pretty handsomely in terms of benefits. And in the United States, we have several unions that give us the benefits of medical care, pension, retirement packages. Companies pay into that. Those are the things that young girls and boys should learn about in our industry, especially girls, because I think a lot of young women don't know that there's the opportunity for them to make great money, travel the world, see a lot more than just, you know, where they grow up. And I think this industry does change you. As you work with people of all these different nationalities, it really changes you. I can't think of a more international setting than maritime, where I'm living, eating, and sleeping next to all my crew members. My life and their life, we all depend upon each other. And not everybody really fully understands that. And now, my dad, years later, he works on Wall Street. He worked his way up, and he was in a union. He was a cop, and now he's a director of a bank on Wall Street. Many years later, came from absolutely nothing. So we really do believe in the American dream. If you work really hard, you can make your way up. And what I found was really interesting is I told him, you know, do you want to really know what my life is like? He's like, yeah. I said, let me give you an idea of what it's like to be shipping. I said, take the most eccentric people from your office and lock them up inside a ship, and you have to eat and live with each other every day for, let's say, 3 months. And every once in a while, I'm going to shake the office up. And you guys have to hold on as best as you can. And I don't care whether you like the chef, you get one, and that's it. However, you're going to get paid really well. And every once in a while, I'm just going to open the front office of your office building, and you're going to be in a completely different location. And you can just do whatever you want for several hours, but then you have to come back in. And afterwards, you're off for 3 to 4 months straight. And he's like, wow. It's one way of giving people an idea of what it's like to live aboard a ship.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you know, I think part of the reason that young girls don't get into the maritime industry is media is quite at fault with that, and the companies that advertise the ability to have a maritime career, because it's just much the same as people with color, to be absolutely honest with you. Any magazine that is advertising, you know, captain's positions or yachting, that sort of thing, it's usually, you know, middle class white boys, really. So I think that sort of eliminates the concept in people's minds that they can actually go for these dreams, and that they are dreams that are available to them. But another thing in a conversation we were having, and something you did touch upon here again, is that you have to have a certain personality if you want to get into this.
Yes. I definitely think that you have to have something called grit. As Simon Sinek, he's one of my favorite guys that I follow. And I think also Mark Manson is another favorite. He wrote a book called The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. There's a lot of things that you have to let go when you work in my industry. You can't cry easily. You can't get upset easily. There's days where you just bite your tongue and you're like, wow, that was a pretty shitty comment. That was really fucked up of you to say that. I can't believe it, but I'm going to move on because I got to see you tomorrow and the day after, and we have to work together, and we have to finish this project, or we have to solve something, and we have to get to the next port, and somehow we're going to have to learn how to get along, whether I don't like you or you don't like me, or we have differing views, or we're from two different parts of the world. I don't really care. So forcing people to have that kind of grit is something that you need to have to get out here, because I think that a lot of young people are a little on the soft side, and they're having a lot of trouble integrating with some of the old salts out here, and especially in the commercial world, and also on these government ships, speaking from the U.S. side, is that, you know, it's a little rougher around the edges than perhaps being on a cruise ship. I don't work on cruise ships. I haven't. I have worked on a yacht in the past, but again, my thing is you have to have grit. You have to have a strong character. You've got to have a strong back. Things aren't always going to go your way, and can't cry or complain about them. And I think, you know, yes, there are a lot of guys in my industry that suck a lot of things up and they hold a lot of emotions back. And I think we all hit down days. There's definitely days where you're just like, this absolutely sucks and I'm depressed. But again, I think that's situational. You know, you have your downs and you have your ups. Not every day is going to be perfect, but you have to have grit. And grit is something, grit and integrity, that no matter what, you know, you remember what your goal is and you remind yourself of that. If it's to be chief engineer, or if it's to just, you know, make it through the end of your trip and have that money so that way you can have a down payment on a house, or you want your first car. If you create those goals for yourself and you can mentally, you know, see them at the end of the tunnel, I think that shipping can be much more reasonable for those personality types that can, you know, handle the rough side of this industry. Because it's not easy when you pull in and out of port and you're waking up at all these crazy hours. I've worked on a lot of different types of ships, from drill ships to ro-ros, government vessels, all different types. And, you know, from commercial to government, you know, there's times where you're just going. I've had days, my longest days, 18 hours. go, 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 and things just have to be done. Obviously, there's STCW working hours, and, you know, you have to give compensatory rest afterwards to crew members if you have a good company and a good captain that cares about those things. Not all companies do, but if you have good companies, good people above you that care about that, that's really important. But again, you know, not all millennials are used to working a 12-hour day. And I'm working 12-hour days for 4 months straight. But then the reward of 4 months of vacation is amazing. And I say to a lot of young girls, I say, well, imagine this. Imagine any hobby, anything that you've ever wanted to do, you can probably do in those 4 months off, right? And what are the two things that most people in life, you know, are missing? It's time and money. Time and money are the two things that people are always missing in their life, you know, and it's easy to get wrapped up in the rat race and just go do your regular 9-to-5 job. But if you want something that's completely unconventional, that doesn't conform to the confines of society, where you lose cell phone signal and you actually enjoy it because you take the time to read a book and, you know, it doesn't get to you, and you find peace and work out and just focus on yourself and what's going on right there and then on the ship and what the next adventure is, this is a great opportunity. And I understand that not everybody is going to make it to captain, and nobody's expected to. If you enjoy being third mate for the rest of your life, I've met people that just love the third mate job and they do that forever. And then, you know, they take some time off and they do something else. But understanding that this career, whatever license you get, opens so many doors, a vast amount of doors that I think a lot of young people don't even realize. You can work overseas. There's 62 maritime academies in the world that you can teach at. That's a lot of possibilities. There's classification societies, and, you know, you can be a port captain, or you can, you know, be a maritime witness, or you can write books about the industry. Or my old professor wrote books, pirate stories, and now he's making movies. You'll meet some of the most interesting characters that you'll ever see, I think, out here. And that's quite unique. So I definitely say grit and integrity are the two things that you gotta have to be out here, and you have to have an open mind. If you're not a flexible person, you might be late for your friend's wedding if you're doing this career. If you're going to miss something at home and you don't want to leave home, then this isn't the career for you. If, you know, you're scared about traveling, then that's not great either. But then again, you can also go on a ship that just stays in the United States and goes up and down the coast, and like an oil tanker that, you know, there's plenty of those that just go, you know, Florida to Texas, for example, up and down the coast. Again, I think there's just so many opportunities, and reaching out to young women especially is something that's important to me. And that's why I started a nonprofit in Aspen, the Women's Maritime Foundation. And I try to speak about the industry and get young girls scholarships for a maritime academy of their choice so they can pursue their dreams of moving up and getting that license, because this isn't cheap to get, or it's, you can go up the Hawes Pike route, but that takes many, many years of sea time working from the bottom up. So it's how you want to do it. There's a few ways of moving up the ladder. But I think also magazines, seeing women in positions, senior positions, will really help, you know, Vogue and Cosmo and all these magazines. Like, they put such an emphasis on fashion and different careers of athletes. But this is just as cool of a job and just as interesting and exciting for young girls. And the ability to be 100% independent when you walk off that ship and have your wallet full and pay off your student loans before all your other friends do, because you made that money and you didn't have to spend it on anything. That's pretty awesome. And then you can go travel the world in your off time and find your hobbies and see all your family. And I think it gives you a lot of freedom and a lot of independence. And I think that's something girls need to learn about and understand that that's a possibility for them. But they're going to have to put the work in. It's not going to be hand given to them. And they're expected to work hard and sometimes twice as hard.
Well, you know, something we were talking about off air, and I would like to invite you back at another date to talk about it, is having a seat at the table. When it comes to policies and when it comes to decision making, when it comes to all those things that do apply directly to your industry, there seems to be a whole group of people that are professional lawmakers and professional politicians, but not a lot of people that have actually been in the trenches.
Yes, very much so. I was recently invited by my union, American Maritime Officers, and the International Trade Federation to go out to London. And there lies the International Maritime Organization, which is under the United Nations. Now, it's a really exciting opportunity for seafarers to be a part of that, but not everybody knows about the opportunity that they have a voice there. And I was at the 75th Marine Environmental Protection Committee with ITF. And with my background, it was quite interesting to see everybody. It's laid out just like the United Nations, where I was part of Model United Nations when I was in high school and college, so I thought this was really awesome. You know, you have all the countries, every single country being represented with their placards, and they're raising their placards and speaking on the behalf of their country's maritime interests. My thing was, I didn't see really any women being represented on the General Council. I didn't see any women, only a few at the different countries around the world. And I also thought there's not that many young people being represented. And so I think it's really important that seafarers know that they have a voice there and that they can join the Nautical Institute or Women in International Shipping and Trade Association or ITF and go out there and really see. This is free. It doesn't cost them any money to go to this. They just have to throw themselves out there and just join. I mean, go to one of these conferences, see how it goes, see how these countries are making decisions that are going to affect us for many, many years down the road. And a lot of these people are not coming from seafaring backgrounds. A lot of them might have been, you know, daddy gave his son a company and a position in his shipping company in Greece or South Korea, and that's how they got a seat and a spot on one of these chairs. And I would really like to be more involved with the International Maritime Organization, just because they do publish so much literature around the world. They have an amazing array of facts and statistics, and they work with those 62 maritime academies that I've spoken about. They do work with a lot of NGOs, and it's just such an amazing organization. And I think a lot of seafarers should know that that is an option for them and that they should try to get involved with the IMO. There's even an IMO ambassador program, which I didn't even know about, that you can be an ambassador to the IMO as a seafarer and do goodwill for your maritime community at home. And so these are the options that people should know about.
Are we going to see you get a seat at the table soon?
I would love to. I would love to down the road apply for that. Again, it takes many years of experience, I think, to get your foot in the door there. I hope that with my background and credentials and working more and attending more of these conferences that I can understand where I can find a seat at that table and where my voice can be heard. I'm also part of the Aspen Institute. which is based in Washington, D.C. and Aspen, Colorado, and they've started a high seas initiative to discuss maritime affairs, and I'll be speaking on that as well. And I also am the first American seafarer to be part of the Younger Member Council of the Nautical Institute based in London. So I represent North America over there, and we're talking about how to grow the maritime education to people from all over the world and within our small local communities as well, and to think about considering a maritime profession, whether that's seafaring or in the office or at a shipping company. There's such a broad range that somebody can be involved in this industry.
Do you know what? You're extremely passionate, and it's great talking to you because, you know, I'm not of the age to get into the industry at this stage, but if I were, you would inspire me.
Thank you very much.
Well, you know what? We'd love to have you back again when you do have the opportunity, because I know, you know, like I said, we've been trying to get together for a week, and every day there's something going on, and you are working every single day right now because it's your turn to work. But I do appreciate your time, and I do appreciate your inspiration, and for you lending a voice to women within maritime and letting us know what we should be looking for, what we can expect, and what we can achieve when we set our minds to it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Once again, you have been listening to Captain Alexandra Hegarty. She is a Master Mariner Unlimited. We thank you so much for your time. You've been watching another edition of Yacht Crew Vlogs right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Rhea. I have been your host. Please tune in for another episode.